Well, good morning, everyone. I don't know how you follow that up. That was amazing. You know, a couple of years ago, I remember sitting in a waiting room, and on the TV in the corner was the launch of a space flight where some people on this flight were not professional astronauts. And at the time, this seemed like a new idea to me. I'd never really thought before that moment. I've never really thought of the possibility that maybe me or maybe somebody I might know might one day think about going into space. This image, this visual on the screen got me thinking, you know, rethinking what I thought was possible. Now, what's fascinating really is if you think about it, it really hasn't been that long that it hasn't really that long since people started traveling into space in the first place. Like, it's been less than 100 years. Some of us remember this, right? And that is fascinating. And to take it back even further, there was a time when the theory of gravity, which was necessary for us to be able to figure out how do we even travel into space in the first place, well, when that theory itself was not understood either. You know, the story goes that Sir Isaac Newton, who was one day in his garden and he watched an apple fall, and sometimes the story is told that it falls on his head, but that's kind of like debatable whether that actually happened. And in that moment of watching the apple fall, he wondered to himself, what makes the apple fall to the ground and not go sideways or go up? What causes that? And so he went on to explore this and showed that the force that makes the apple fall to the ground and the force that holds us here instead of floating around all over the place is the same force that keeps the planets in orbit. And that actually was one of the principles that actually helps us, you know, get to the point where we could fly off into space. Now, today, this understanding of gravity, like I said, like what makes the apple fall to the ground? Why doesn't it go sideways or up? We kind of chuckle because we're like, that sounds ridiculous because we just take for granted that gravity is, you know, a thing. And we've always maybe understood it. But at one point, this was a revolutionary idea and has paved the way for things to become possible that were previously unthinkable. Let's keep this in mind as we reflect on the resurrection of Jesus this morning, because no one that day was expecting Jesus to be raised from the dead. In fact, even for Jesus' friends, it must have looked like the Jesus story had come to an end with his death. I mean, Jesus' disciples had spent a lot of time with him over the past few years. They'd listened to him teach, they'd watched him perform some pretty amazing miracles, and they'd witnessed his rise in popularity. Everything was going very, very well. But then everything seemed to fall apart over the course of a few days when one of their friends chose to betray Jesus. And in that moment, most of them scattered and they watched Jesus suffer and die from the shadows. Well, in our final reading on Friday, in our Good Friday service, we read about a man named Joseph of Arimathea who took the body of Jesus and wrapped it in burial clothes and placed it in his own tomb. And watching all this happen are two women. There's Mary Magdalene and another woman that is just referred to as the other Mary. But the burial process gets interrupted by the Sabbath, and so after the Sabbath, the women return to finish preparing Jesus' body for burial. Now again, to everyone watching, this story seemed to be over. You know, whatever Jesus had been about, that had failed. And so they responded by doing what you did when somebody died. You mourned and you prepared a body for burial. But when the women arrived at the tomb to pick up where they'd left off, they realized that things weren't as they seemed. And so the big idea that we're going to be talking about and exploring this morning is this, that the resurrection reveals that new things are possible that previously seemed unthinkable. And so we're going to be reading Matthew's account of the resurrection from Matthew chapter 28. After the Sabbath, at dawn on the first day of the week, Mary Magdalene and the other Mary went to look at the tomb. There was a violent earthquake, for an angel of the Lord came down from heaven and going to the tomb, rolled back the stone and sat on it. His appearance was like lightning and his clothes were white as snow. The guards were so afraid of him that they shook and became like dead men. The angel said to the woman, "Do not be afraid, for I know you are looking for Jesus who was crucified. He is not here. He has risen just as he said. Come and see the place where he lay. Then quickly go and tell his disciples. He is risen from the dead and is going ahead of you into Galilee. There you will see him. Now I have told you." So the woman hurried away from the tomb, afraid yet filled with joy, and ran to tell his disciples. Suddenly Jesus met them. "Greetings," he said. They came to him, clasped his feet, and worshipped him. Then Jesus said to them, "Do not be afraid. Go and tell my brothers to go to Galilee. There they will see me." You know, Jesus had not tried to hide from his friends what would happen to him. In fact, Jesus had not only talked about his death, but he talked about how he would rise from the dead on the third day. Now, as a child, I always kind of questioned the math on this one, because to me, like, I was taught to count days as full days, and when I did the math on this one, it felt like two-ish. But this made sense in the way that, you know, the Jewish people counted days back then. It made sense, you know, and so as a result, Jesus, he died on Friday afternoon, and he was buried before sundown, and so that counts as day one. And he remained in the tomb all day Saturday, and so clearly, okay, I could come up aboard. That was day two. And then from sundown Saturday until his resurrection on Sunday morning, well, that counts as day three. That's just how they counted days. And so this is when the women arrived at the tomb to assist the family in finalizing body for burial. They were there for a job. Now, in how Matthew talks about the resurrection, he includes the fact that there's an earthquake that hit that region early that morning. And what Matthew wants us to see is he wants to see the connection between this earthquake, the resurrection of Jesus, and the appearance of the angel. Now, you know, what was the purpose of the earthquake here? Was it that the earthquake was how the angel rolled away the stone? Was the earthquake caused by the rolling away of the stone? We don't really know. But what Matthew's trying to get us to imagine is this supernatural event, this supernatural story that includes an angel showing up to tell a really important, make a really important announcement. Now, entrances to tombs back then were sealed in a whole variety of ways, and this one seems to have been sealed by a cylindrical stone that was rolled up a trough, and it could be wedged open while a body was being attended to inside. And Matthew tells us that after the angel rolls away the stone, that he sits on it. And this right here is a visual of the triumph that has taken place. That the stone that was put in place and sealed there by the guards as a symbol of defeat is now a symbol of triumph with this angel sitting on top of it. And the stone being rolled away is not to let Jesus out, but it's actually to allow other people in so they can see that the tomb is empty. Now, as we reflect on the story, we need to keep in mind that the religious leaders were so scared that Jesus' friends would come and steal the body and fake a resurrection, that what they did is they went to the Roman governor and they convinced him to assign guards to the tomb. Now, it's hard to know exactly how many guards there would have been, but we need to imagine that there were enough soldiers in place to be able to handle or deter a crowd. And these were men who were battle-hardened. These were people who were used to controlling chaotic situations. These were people who had seen some real stuff. And yet, the appearance of this angel makes them so scared that they pass out. But when the women arrive to the tomb, you know, this angel that terrified these professional soldiers switches gears, and he becomes a comforting presence. And he tells them to not be afraid. See, while the angel's presence was terrifying to the guards, he's bringing good news that would bring great joy, that would be life-changing to these women and anybody who heard their story. And so he invites them to examine the place where they had just a couple days ago witnessed the body getting laid, and to go and examine that now it is empty. And the angel says, "He is not here. He is risen, just as he said." Now, I think we have to imagine and appreciate the mental and emotional roller coaster that these women are going through in these moments. I mean, in the past week, they've gone from the highest of highs, walking with Jesus as he's riding into Jerusalem, as the crowds are chanting, and they're like, well, maybe this guy is the Messiah King that we've been waiting for. And then they've sunk to the lowest of lows as they've watched Jesus get beaten and be crucified. And while they're likely still in some form of shock, as they come to the tomb to finish the burial process, maybe they're starting to come to terms with what has happened or what is happening. But now, you know, just as they're maybe starting to come to terms with, now they are met by this angel who tells them that Jesus is not dead, that the grave is empty, and that Jesus is alive, and that they can find him in this place called Galilee. And the angel gives them the job of taking this news back to the rest of the disciples, and who in that moment are hunkered down in grief, in shock, in fear, and they're supposed to go and tell them what they just experienced. Matthew tells us that the reaction of these women is one of fear, but also great joy. These two emotions are mixed together. You know, I'm sure that as these women were walking to the tomb that morning, that they had a sense of fear as they were going there, not knowing how those guards were going to respond to them. Were they going to be friendly? Were they going to make fun of them? And you know what? They'd been associates of Jesus, so who's not to say that they weren't going to suffer the same fate as Jesus? And now they get this news that they don't really know what it means. And so I think we can appreciate that fear would be a natural response. But at the same time, there's something deep in them that's beginning to recognize that everything that they'd hoped for in Jesus was actually beginning to come true. That maybe, just maybe, they could hope again. And this brings joy. You know, there are times in our lives where we might find ourselves questioning our recollection of certain events. Something seems like it's too good to be true, and you start to wonder, did that really happen? No, it couldn't be. You know, I think at a moment like this, like a moment like this for these women, you know, it would have been completely reasonable for them to start second-guessing what they'd experienced. I mean, like, the tomb's empty. Are we sure we went to the right tomb? Like, are we sure about this? And, like, you know, if that had been the end of the story, as they walked home that day, maybe they wouldn't have ever told the disciples about what they'd experienced, because maybe by the end of it, they would have been like, we're not so sure. But Jesus doesn't let that happen. And he shows up to confirm what the angel had told them about. And we can almost imagine the scene where they're walking and they hear a familiar voice calling out to them. And in that moment, they know. And they turn and they see Jesus, and they're overwhelmed with warmth and emotion, and they fall at his feet, holding on to him, and Matthew tells us they worshiped. They know. Again, we need to appreciate that it must have been hard to keep up with everything that was going on. And so this is why I think we hear Jesus repeat almost exactly what the angel said to them, starting with, don't be afraid. These are words of comfort. Hey, you know me. Don't be afraid. It's okay. And after that moment, he sends them off and says, okay, now you need to tell my brothers, you need to tell the other disciples, the people that I consider family, you need to tell them what you've experienced and that they can meet me too in Galilee. One of the things that I'm learning to appreciate is that in our house, bedtime is the time to ask really big life questions, like really big. And at first it caught me off guard, because you'd be like, okay, the kids are almost asleep. And then just that little moment, a little voice pipes up and says, Daddy, what happens when we die? Or Daddy, where do babies come from? I don't know about you, but 8:45 at night, I am not at my best at answering big questions. But this is when questions get asked. And what I'm learning is to see is in that moment, they feel safe to ask some of those big questions that are natural for us to want to ask. My hope for our church community here at West Heights is that we can be a safe place to ask some of the big questions that we might have. And for some of us, one of the questions might be about how reliable are the accounts of the resurrection that we find in the Gospels? Now, admittedly, it's impossible to scientifically prove a historical event like we can test and prove other things in a lab. But there are things about the resurrection that invites us to see it as being as much of a historical event as other events that we just simply accept as being true. For instance, the accounts of the resurrection are just really too problematic to have been made up. In every gospel, the first eyewitnesses of Jesus are women. And as much as we might disagree with this now, in the first century, the low social status of women meant that their testimony was not admissible evidence in court. They were considered unreliable. Therefore, having all of the first witnesses of the risen Jesus being women would have undermined the credibility of the story had it not been true. In fact, there must have been enormous pressure to remove the women from these accounts. But the problem was they couldn't, because the record was too well known and their testimony was being told and retold at an absolutely astonishing pace. In addition, we have to take these accounts seriously when we see that the Gospels include both the empty tomb and the accounts of people meeting with Jesus. I mean, had there been an empty tomb and no sightings of Jesus, no one would have concluded there was a resurrection. They would have assumed that the body had been stolen. And if there had only been sightings of Jesus and no empty tomb, no one would have concluded that it was a resurrection either because, well, you know, people report seeing departed loved ones frequently. But if both of these things were true at the same time, then we have to take seriously the possibility that Jesus was raised from the dead. Now, almost right away, Christians started to proclaim a bodily resurrection. But here's the thing. Nobody in Jerusalem would have believed this for a minute. And remember, the day of Pentecost, it talks about at least 3,000 people came to faith. Nobody in Jerusalem would have believed this for a minute if the tomb had not been empty. In fact, skeptics could have easily produced the body. And not only that, but the early church regularly pointed to the testimony of eyewitnesses, which would not have been possible if not literally hundreds of people had not reported seeing the resurrected Jesus. You know, it's natural to be skeptical of the resurrection. It really is. And the first century people would have found this just as inconceivable as we might. No non-Jewish people from that area of the world did not have a belief in a resurrection in the afterlife. And the Jewish folks had a different idea of what the resurrection would look like that didn't look like one man coming back from the grave. They were just as skeptical as we might have been. The only way that they embraced that the resurrection was true was by letting the evidence challenge and change their view of what was possible. Again, they would have just as much difficulty with the claims of the resurrection as we might, but both the eyewitness accounts and the changed lives of Jesus' followers was overwhelming and invited people to rethink what they thought was possible. It's no secret that I'm a sports fan, and believe it or not, to those of you who are not, who are like, oh no, I actually try my best to not talk about sports on Sunday mornings. So I know it makes some of you just kind of glaze over, but I'm going to do it one more time this morning because it's Easter. I don't know what that means. One of my favorite teams is the Toronto Blue Jays, but let me say, we talked about this with a few people last fall, and the way the last season ended was frustrating. We organized a support group, and they've done very little over the course of this offseason to make me feel much more hopeful. But despite this, there is something that happens to me every time about this time of year that boggles my mind. Every year at the beginning of a new season, I always have this twinge of hope that things could be different. And despite how things ended, that maybe, just maybe, things could be better this year. In a sense, this is the invitation of the resurrection. That we are invited to allow ourselves to feel a twinge of hope that despite things often feeling like they are too much or they're too big or they're too impossible, that maybe, just maybe, things could be different because Jesus is alive. You know, for some of us, when we look at our lives, we have trouble seeing past how our default settings just aren't working and they're causing chaos, or how our bad habits seem to be controlling us, or moving past memories of our regrets, or getting past the hurts that somebody else has caused us. Well, this morning, we are reminded that the resurrection makes transformation possible. You know, the resurrection is a historical event, but it's so much more than that. It's a symbol of the transformation that Jesus can bring and does bring into our lives. That he can change our default settings. That he can give us the power to overcome our bad habits that threaten to control us. That his forgiveness can help us move past our past. That he can give us power to help us forgive those who've hurt us. That the resurrection makes transformation possible. For others of us, our lives might be feeling kind of aimless at the moment. You know, maybe it's because we are young and the whole world is in front of us, and that is overwhelming. Or maybe it's because we're kind of old, and maybe we have less things to do than we used to, and we're wondering, hey, what am I supposed to do when I wake up? What's my reason for getting up in the morning? Or maybe we're somewhere in the middle, and our calendars might be full, but we have find ourselves thinking, there's got to be more to life than this. Well, this morning, one of the things that the resurrection reminds us of is that the resurrection gives Jesus' followers purpose. You know, the resurrection of Jesus signifies the victory of God over the powers of sin and death and how he has replaced despair with hope and joy. And as we read through Matthew's account of the resurrection, two times these women are told to go and to tell other people about what they have experienced, what they have witnessed. See, their experience of Jesus was not just for them. It was supposed to be shared with others so that other people could experience Jesus too. You know, for those of us who follow Jesus, we have been given a purpose that is woven beautifully into every part of our lives. It looks like allowing the transformation of what Jesus has done and what he continues to do in our lives to be seen by others as we show love, as we grant forgiveness, as we act with humility in our day-to-day interactions. It looks like acts of kindness towards others, towards those in need. And as a little bit of an aside, over the next couple weeks, we're going to be hearing about one way that we can do this as a community. We can show love to our neighborhood through our neighborhood cleanup. And the information about that was in our newsletter this morning, and you can sign up for that. But that is just one thing that we can do to live out the purpose that Jesus has given us, to show love to our neighbors through acts of kindness. And then from time to time, it will include talking about God's love and talking about the transformation that we have experienced with other people when the opportunities arrive. You know, as followers of Jesus, we've each been given a purpose of making the hope of the resurrection known in the lives of our family, our friends, our coworkers, and more. We've been given that purpose. Lastly, I want to acknowledge that for some of us, right now, we are in seasons where we are feeling overwhelmed, where we are feeling scared, where we are feeling heartbroken, where we are feeling absolutely hopeless. You know, for some of us, we are on a journey with a loved one whose health is failing and there is no promise that they're going to get better. For others of us, we are grieving because there is somebody who should be with us right now who is not. Some of us, we're struggling because we've been looking for work for a long time to support our families, and we think we've tried everything, and we can't find what we need. For others of us, as we look to the future, we are struggling to see how our dreams have any chance of coming true. And still, for others of us, there's a particular relationship that feels so broken that we can't imagine how things could be any different. In moments like this, like these, hope feels impossible, but the resurrection makes hope possible. When Jesus was crucified, the hopes of his followers were extinguished, and what they were left with was fear, grief, and uncertainty. But in this place where hope feels like it went to die, where it felt like it was impossible, the resurrected Jesus turns the fears of these women into joy. You know, folks, I'm not going to try to pretend to tell you how God's going to bring hope into some of the situations that you're facing, because I don't know. That wouldn't be fair for me to speculate. But I will remind us that the resurrection makes hope possible. Because Jesus is alive, we can find hope in some rather unexpected places. You know, that God has the ability to turn our troubles into blessings. And then even in those moments when maybe our situations don't get turned around, at least not in the way that we had hoped it would be, we can remember that in our hardships, we can remember actually that our hardships are not the end of the story. And in this, we can experience joy because Jesus is alive and Jesus is with us and Jesus is the one who gives us love, joy, hope, even in mind-boggling situations. He's alive. He is risen. He is risen indeed. Please join me in prayer. Lord Jesus, we want to say thank you for our time together this morning and the time of worship that we will continue to have. Lord, it is good to be able to celebrate together. Lord, this morning we acknowledge that our focus is often on our struggles. It's often on where things have gone wrong. It's often on the things that we feel are missing in our lives. It's often on our heartaches. And Lord, we are grateful that you are with us in those places when our focus is off center, Lord, that you are with us and that you love us and that, Lord, you are reminding us to look to you in these moments. Lord, this morning as we celebrate the resurrection, we are reminded of what you make possible. Lord, for some of us, what we're stuck in is the realization that there are patterns in our lives that are not good. There are things that we wish would be different. There are regrets that we are holding on to. There is bitterness that we can't seem to forgive. And so, Lord Jesus, this morning we are asking that your resurrected life would flow through us and would transform us. Lord, would you help us to look to you? And Lord, would you make us new? Lord, this morning, for others of us, we feel kind of aimless. We aren't really sure what direction our life is supposed to be going in. And so this morning, we invite you to give us your purpose, to speak into our lives and to show us the opportunities that we have to live out your new life, to show your love, your grace, your joy, your mercy in our relationships. Lord, sometimes this isn't obvious to us, and so we just ask that you would help us to catch a glimpse of what we can do, of what you would have us do in the places that you've put us. Lord, for others of us this morning, we are in a place of struggle. And God, we're not going to list it all, but you know. We're in a place of struggle, we're in a place of hurt. And what we need is we need your life to come in to make us new, to bring healing, to bring comfort, to give us hope again. And so, Lord Jesus, as we close our service singing together, would you give us the hope that only you can give, a real, lasting.